that does scream out, we need a new darn tunnel.
We're going to have continue to have a challenging, in my opinion, a challenging time at least through New Year's Eve. We can't have a one-shot or a two-shot infusion once every decade and expect to fund a safe and reliable mass transit system.
This is Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO news production in collaboration with WHYY and WNYC. I'm Nancy Solomon, and I'm joined here in the studios of WBGO in Newark by New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy. Good evening, Governor.
Good evening, Nancy. Nice to be back.
Thanks for being here. And we're pleased to give New Jersey residents the opportunity to ask their questions. But first, a brief shout-out is in order. Tonight, we're celebrating, and we've already popped the cork, we're celebrating many years of service by WBGO and WHYY State House reporter Phil Gregory, who'll be retiring at the end of the month after 47 years in radio. So job well done, Phil, and good luck with the retirement. Listeners, what do you want to hear from Governor Murphy? If you'd like to ask a question, the number to call is 844-677-9283. 844-677-9283. And we'll also be taking questions on social media, so tweet them to the governor by using the hashtag AskGovMurphy. In a few minutes, we're going to be talking about New Jersey Transit, so commuters, be sure to get in touch with us, make the call, and ask the governor your question. And so first we'll start. We have lots of callers on the line, but let's start with a piece of tape we collected. We went out in advance of the show and talked to sort of your typical man or woman on the street to find out what they want to know.
Good evening, Governor. My name is Kerry. I'm from Old Bridge, New Jersey. And my question for you is it really necessary to raise gas prices again with another tax hike? We're already paying an astronomical amount. Even some gas stations here are paying more than New York.
Governor?
First of all, great to be back. And I want to give my own shout out to Phil Gregory, one of the guys in this business. He's been at it for 47 years, 9 years here at BGO, and he does it as right as anybody. So hats off to him. Carrie's question from Old Bridge, she's frustrated by that. Let me just say, so am I. The Transportation Trust Fund was allowed basically to go bankrupt. The can was kicked down the road year after year, particularly in the last administration. And they finally reached a deal going on 2 years ago. But that deal, I wouldn't say deliberately, but it completely missed the mark in terms of what it expected fuel consumption to be. So it's not my decision. I want to make sure Kerry knows that, first of all. There's a formula. It's in place. The treasurer of the state has to actually look at the formula and figure out whether or not we are putting enough money into the Transportation Trust Fund. And unfortunately, because the expectation was so mismarked 2 years ago, the treasurer made the decision to raise gas prices just over 4 cents. I'm not a fan of it either. Having said that, unlike a lot of other taxes and fees people pay in New Jersey, on this one, you know exactly where the money's going. And as you drive around the state and you see at long last roads, bridges, trains, rails rather, getting fixed, potholes getting filled, you'll at least know that the money is being put to good use. But this is one, a classic New Jersey, kick the can down the road year after year after year. A complete absence of leadership. We're now making up for lost time. We'll get back on our feet, but this is one that we have to abide by the formula.
And the rise in the gas tax was written into the bill that was the bill Chris Christie signed.
Correct.
So you inherited
that
this.
Is correct. This is, I think, from December of 2016. So a formula is baked into that, and it is what it is. But as I say, I don't blame Kerry for being frustrated by it. I am too. Hopefully, again, we'll get this into a better shape. We'll fill up our potholes, fix our roads, and get the Transportation Trust Fund back to where it used to be, which was a national model.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the first caller we have is actually somebody that is somewhat of a colleague. I know Mike Rispoli of Free Press is on the line. Mike, you're on the line with the governor.
Hi, Governor Murphy. Calling you from Middletown, New Jersey. So,
hey, Mike, how are you?
Good.
Middletown, of course, as you know, is my hometown, so nice to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I was calling because, like Nancy said, I work for the Free Press Action Fund. For the past year, we've been working on a bill, the Civic Info Bill, and you signed that bill last month, and I want to thank you for that first and foremost. Mm-hmm. It would create the Civic Information Consortium that would invest money into keeping New Jersey residents better informed. When you signed the bill, even though there had been $5 million allocated in the budget for it, you said that that money may not be there after all. And so the question I had for you tonight was, what are your plans on to fund the Civic Information Consortium so that New Jersey residents who have been harmed by journalism cutbacks over the past decade to make sure that they can get the news and information they need to stay informed and engaged?
So, Mike, let me back up and say we like this notion very much. That's the reason I signed it. And I said something to Phil Gregory before we went on the air. And it's not just about Phil and Nancy and yourself, but the folks who do journalism the right way, who do the proper primary source research. They consider all sources. It's properly edited and vetted. We got to hold that model up. That notion of free press is more important than ever before with all the noise out there, particularly with this president. So it's in that context signing that bill was, as they say, a no-brainer. The problem is exactly as you said. Where's the money that's going to support that effort? And we're still—that's a work in progress. You know, we've been dealt. We inherited 8 months ago, yesterday, by the way, a lousy fiscal and economic and funding reality, and this is yet another example of that. So we are committed to trying to figure out a not just to have this established in law, which it is. And I'm proud of that, but also put resources behind it that allows it to do the work it's intended to. So stay tuned.
And so, but this money did come from, wasn't it from the sale of the broadband, the public TV broadband? So, so that money, shouldn't that money have stayed in the fund?
You would think so, Nance, right? But it is New Jersey after all. So by the time we got there, it appears to have been spoken for.
And this happens. Chris Christie thing, or this is under your
no,
watch?
It isn't a me thing, no. But this is a time and time again thing in New Jersey. I thought we did a deal to do X, and yet you get there and there's no money to back X up. We can't turn that ship around overnight, but we are slowly but surely chipping away, not just at good governance stuff like Mike, as Mike raised in that bill we signed, but the way of doing business in this state, the way of doing business, which is, you know, this is a good example of that, where you're robbing Peter to pay Paul. You thought you did something, you find out later on actually something behind closed doors and behind curtains happened and it isn't there anymore. Sick and tired of that. Absolutely sick and tired. And I'm not alone. The good news is everybody is, and we're slowly but surely chipping away at that.
Okay, well, let's take another call. We've got Ed in South Plainfield next. Ed, you're on the line with the governor.
Hi, thank you very much. Hello, Governor. Thank you for taking the time.
Ed, how are you?
Very good. I'm a PBA 105 member, and I was just hoping that you're still considering, keeping negotiations open with us. We've been getting beat up really bad. Law enforcement has been getting beat up bad throughout the state.
Yep.
And under Governor Christie, we definitely took a beating, and we were hoping that with you, we would get a little bit more fair treatment. As a state worker, we're stuck under the 2% cap, and you just awarded two contracts, one with AFSCME and the other one with CWA, where they got phenomenal contracts, and at the same time, people working right alongside of these people are working two jobs to just make ends meet. Something has to be done. We got people leaving law enforcement in the state police, corrections, going to counties.
So, Ed, do you have a question?
Totally.
Ed, do you have a question for the governor?
Yes. Is he going to, is he still open to negotiations, and are we going to work on this and move forward?
Oh, absolutely, Ed. First of all, good to hear from you, and South Plainfield's a favorite place of mine. I get there basically every Labor Day and walk in the parade, one of the great events of the year. PBA 105 is filled with a lot of really good folks who have been very good to deal with in my experiences over the past several years. Absolutely, we negotiate in good faith, and we absolutely want to do that. You mentioned some contracts that we had resolved. I think they're fair results. I think they're really good, fair results, both for the workers represented, and we're big believers in union labor and organized labor, but also I think taxpayers can look at it and say, you know what, this is a good, fair, adult solution. And again, negotiations with the likes of whether it's PBA 105 or other public sector unions, whether they be uniform or not, those cans were kicked down the road year after year after year. And in fact, the last administration, the Christie administration, did something that no administration had done before from either side of the aisle, and that is when the contracts were expired and there was no negotiations, the so-called step increases that were normally adhered to and accepted were not. So in many cases, on what we've settled, we've been making up for lost time. The huge proportion of the settlements or the new contracts, rather, have related to lookbacks, making up for what we didn't do in the past, far more so than going forward. But I want folks to know that, most importantly, I want to shout out law enforcement, whether it's PBA 105, first responders, firefighters up and down the state. They put their lives on the line every day. And state workers more generally, whether it be educators or state or local employees, all of the above have gotten the raw end of the deal over the past 8 to 10 years. And we are committed, one, you know, chipping away. Again, this is like a minute ago, Nancy, you can't get all this done overnight, but chipping away, getting responsible solutions, responsible results that work for the workers, that respect organized labor, respect collective bargaining. And at the same time, you're a taxpayer, you're looking at it and say, you know what, this is adult leadership. That's what we're committed to.
You know, speaking of relationships with labor unions and negotiations, you had a big announcement today. You got a deal with the public employee unions that'll lower the cost of health care benefits. So, you know, give us the big picture about what that's about, because frankly, anytime there's talk of insurance and health insurance and all the numbers, my eyes glaze over, especially at this hour of the night.
Exactly.
So, but what's the big picture there? What are you trying to achieve, and what's that going to do for the state?
So it's a big deal. It is a big deal. And it's a holy grail, sort of what I call the holy grail, meaning the individual gets the same health coverage, if not better. The individual saves money. The state saves money. And I'm really proud of the fact that we sat at the same table with representatives from a whole range of public sector interests. We announced today, and it was specific to the educators, both NJEA and AFT, but we've had, and I give them enormous amount of kudos for coming to the table in good faith, sitting with our folks and working out a very responsible, good result that works, as I say, that opportunity where it works for everybody. We had already in a separate auspices, in a separate plan design committee, which these committees are called, had achieved a similar result. You know, on that one, I give other public sector unions in particular, I want to give CWA a shout out, in particular their leader, Hetty Rosenstein, for being a thought leader on this. And that's what we announced today. So it's doing things like switching retirees into Medicare Advantage, which is a proven, easy to deal with, high quality health care coverage auspices, wherein you can save money. It's incenting folks to go in network and trying to help them avoid the scourge of even inadvertently going outside of network and getting completely hammered. It's smarter prescription drug procurement at better costs with same, if not better, results. There are folks out there who want to shrink the healthcare nut by shrinking benefits and impairing benefits. I think in this day and age, with the middle class in this state struggling so much, frankly, that's the last thing we should be doing. But what we should be doing is reducing healthcare costs. You know, I ask myself, why are we trying to find our, you know, cut our way to salvation by ripping benefits from people when there are huge opportunities to reduce costs and keep the benefits at least as where they are today. You mentioned this today as an announcement that is a total over 2 years, fiscal years, of just under $500 million. That's real savings, and we got to find more of that going forward, and we're committed to it.
Okay, let's go to a question from the phones. We've got Scott from Mercer County. Hi, Scott. You're on the air with the governor.
Hi, Governor. How are you?
I'm good. Where are you, Mercer, Scott?
I am in Hamilton, actually.
All right. Greetings to Hamilton.
Thank you. I am also a PBA 105 member, and I was listening to the last question that you answered, and as you can see, as a membership, we are very frustrated with the way negotiations is going. You know, we had thousands of people out campaigning for you, knocking on doors to get you elected based upon your promises again for us. I just want to reiterate that you're going to stick to your promises, and we're going to speed this up. A lot of these guys have been frozen at $40,000 for 3 years, you know, and it's killing them. It's bankrupting them. They're losing their house, their cars.
Yep.
So Scott, I want to hear a promise from you that we're going to speed this up and get it done fairly.
Scott, we're going to do it in the fastest, most responsible way possible. You mentioned that folks have been sitting there at those sorts of numbers for 3 years. I've been here for 8 months yesterday. We are going as fast as we can. We want to do this the right way. We respect completely the concerns and the challenges, the middle class in this state. And it's no more evident than in our union brothers and sisters, whether it's in the public sector or not, have been squeezed. The middle class has been hollowed out on the back of organized labor more often than not. We're committed to turning that back. I think we have shown ample evidence in the first 8 months that we've made a lot of progress toward that. We have not gotten everything solved yet, but we are committed to being true to ourselves and good for our word.
So let's change gears for a bit here and talk about election security. So New Jersey has been cited as having one of the most vulnerable voting systems in the nation. The feds have given the state $10 million to start fixing problems with election security. Reporting from New Jersey Spotlight, the online news site, says that only a small amount of that is going to create a paper trail, which is one of the goals, is to not have it be 100% electronic, but have a paper trail, but the rest is going to DMV. So why is that?
Let me go step back, Nance, and just say that you the folks who rate, and by the way, I'm not spiking any footballs. I was the U.S. ambassador in Germany. I had to deal with the Russians, the Iranians, and the North Koreans, and the Chinese. And believe me, there are lots of people out there trying to impair our democratic values, our election processes. So I just count us in the highly vigilant category, taking election security really seriously. Period. Full stop. Just had a
Good
meeting on
know.
This literally 10 days ago. The folks who rank New Jersey low are the folks who believe the only secure system is a paper trail. And I would just say for folks listening in, that's one path. It's a little bit like, is a single payer the objective in healthcare, or is universal healthcare coverage the objective? My opinion is universal healthcare coverage is the objective. Single payer is one option of many that we have to choose from. In this case, election, airtight election security is the objective. A paper trail is one method or one path that gets us there. I personally think, and again, I'm not celebrating and I'm not spiking any footballs, that we have a meaningfully more secure system than that statement would imply. But it's something we take very seriously. The $10 million from the federal government, we are obviously trying to use to the best, highest, maximum impact. And we don't take the threats lightly. But again, I think if you're obsessed or married only to the notion that a paper trail means that's the only way that equates with election security, I think that's a false sense. But we work on this vigilantly.
So the goal is not to create a paper trail?
Not
and if
necessarily.
So what are you going to spend that money
not,
on?
Not necessarily. And also, this is a county, so the state has to work with the individual counties. And so I wouldn't say categorically no on paper trails, but I don't want folks to think that just because they may vote and there's no paper trail on November 6th that there somehow is an insecure machine or an insecure process. I actually feel quite confident where we are, but again, we take literally nothing for granted in this sphere.
And in 10, 15 seconds, can you explain what the money is for DMV? Is it for strengthening ID?
Yeah, so you've got strengthening ID. You've got voter registration, which is going to be run in many cases through the DMV.
Okay, thanks. I'm Nancy Solomon. This is Ask Governor Murphy.
Supporting WHYY, Mural Arts. This October, celebrate Mural Arts Month and the power of public art with Mural Arts Philadelphia. You can join Mural Arts and ignite change at more than 25 no-ticket-required public events, ranging from thought-provoking symposia to community mural dedications in neighborhoods across the city. Mural Arts Month is your chance to connect with Philadelphia. More information at muralarts.org/muralartsmonth.
Supporting WHYY, the Penn Center for Women's Behavioral Wellness, currently conducting research on PMS and stress. Did you know that PMS affects 20-30% of premenopausal women? If you experience feelings of sadness, anxiety, or irritability the week before your period that then go away shortly after your period arrives, you may be eligible to participate. More info at 215-746-1157 or PennPMS.com.
You're listening to Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WNYC and WHYY. Got a question for the governor? Call us at 844-677-9283 or send us your questions on Twitter or Facebook with the hashtag AskGovMurphy.
I'm Nancy Solomon. We're live in Newark with Governor Phil Murphy, and we're taking your calls. What do you want to hear about, folks? Give the governor a call at 844-677-9283. So let's talk about New Jersey Transit. That has certainly been one of the hot topics lately. Commuters were told last year that this would be the summer, that it would be the summer of hell. It ended up not being quite as bad as predicted, but this year it turned out to be the summer of hell. And we had an engineer shortage that was causing delays and cancellations, leaving many riders furious. And you've indicated that this could drag on through the fall and into the winter. I'd like to play a clip of tape. We spoke with one commuter who described his experiences.
Hello, my name's Dave. I live in South Jersey. Commute to downtown New York daily. Biggest issues with New Jersey Transit. Local trains are canceled prior to the express trains. Express trains turn into the local trains, extending my commute and causing major inconvenience. Also, overcrowding. Had to stand on a one-hour express train multiple times. There's really not much I can do about it, but those are my grievances.
So I think, you know, the cancellations are really one of the key issues.
Sure.
So what are you looking at about that?
I don't blame Dave for being frustrated, so let me just say that. I am as well. And this is a big one. We're going to get this right. That's the important point. That we are going to get this right, and there is a clear path toward getting it right. The problem is, as I said earlier about some things that are on our plate, no matter how good a job we do, we can't fix all of what we've inherited overnight. And I want to make sure, and bear with me here for both Dave and others who are listening in, we have to get this right. We're the densest state in the nation. We're the fourth smallest geographically. We sit beside the largest market in the world in New York, one of the largest in the country in Philadelphia. Getting transit right, both rail and bus, is not optional. It's pass-fail, and we will pass. There's no other choice. We came into office 8 months ago. In 2011, the federal government mandated a safety system to be installed at all commuter rail systems in the country. It's a smart system called positive train control. We run a safe system, but this is even a better, safer reality. 2011. On January 16th, when I had my hand on the Bible, we were 13% of the way toward achievement of that objective. When is the deadline? December 31st, 2018. As we sit here tonight, Nancy, on September 17th, 8 months and one day later, we're over 60%, well over 60% toward that objective. I'm incredibly proud of the team. The bad news is you've got to take cars and trains offline. Even in the Atlantic City line case, you've got to take it down for 3 months because we have no other choice. This is a binary. Either you meet this mandate or you don't. It takes 290-something engineers to run the system every day. We used to have a total number of engineers in the well north of 400. Because of the last administrations, whether it's flat-out canceling classes, furloughing classes, not recruiting, restricting that you've got to be in-state, that number's down to the low 300s, 330-something. Very few degrees of freedom if someone's sick, vacation, etc. So we're committed to achieving the safety system that the federal government has mandated, and we will. We are committed to recruiting aggressively and increasing the engineering pool. We just got permission to hire out-of-state engineers. I would like the legislature to make that a formal, permanent reality. We will achieve both of those objectives. We will get back to where we used to be, which is the premier commuter rail and bus system in the United States. I don't take this for granted, by the way. Every single morning, I demand and get an update as to how many trains have been annulled for that particular day, and not only how many, but why. I myself ride the rails once or twice a week, unannounced spot check. I did on Friday. Tomorrow I'll be back in NJ Transit doing the same thing. We are obsessed with getting this right, and we will.
But one of the things that's been brought up about the cancellations was why not, especially in the summertime, why not slim down the schedule? And why wasn't the decision made to cancel trains for the summer and so that commuters could plan in advance, how they were going to get to work each morning?
In some cases, some of the reasons which led to trains getting canceled, you could foresee. And we need to do, and I've said this publicly and I'll repeat it, we need to do a better job of communicating. And I will say that there's a very good plan in place to not just substantively change the organization, but to communicate better. But secondly, some of the factors that enter into a sickness, for instance, you don't have visibility on that. We were running, Nancy, in August, literally, and I think this averaging, I believe this is right, 686 to 690 trains a day out of a possible 694. So as a batting, I'm a baseball guy, as a batting average, that's really good, unless it's your train. Yeah. In which case, you don't really care about the other 690. And I don't blame folks. But I want to give folks an appreciation that we've looked in the mirror. We know what we've inherited. We have a plan to deal with it. We've looked in the mirror in terms of our own communications in particular. And we are on it. It won't be overnight. You know, between now at least and December 31st with the positive train control deadline, we're going to continue to have challenges. But we're going to do everything we can, and we will get back to where we used to be and need to be as a premier bus and rail system in this country.
All right, we're going to bring in Joe Hernandez of WHYY, who's been monitoring social media. Joe, I hope we're on the topic of NJ Transit.
Yes, a lot of people are asking about NJ Transit and transportation in general. But, Governor, here's a question you may not have gotten before from Anna McCarthy. She says, why is there no walkway between New Jersey and Manhattan? You want to reduce traffic and emissions. It's 3 miles, perfect exercise for walkers and bikers.
I love it. I don't know if Anna's listening, but I love it.
I love it, too.
Like, come on, let's go.
Have you ever been to the one over in Poughkeepsie over the Hudson where it's just a walking
bridge? No, but I know it.
Bridge, or the one in London?
I know the one in London. I've been in several in Germany.
One.
Let's go. We're going to cut the show early tonight and go out and build it. Listen, we have to rely on all of the above. The other issue, Nancy, that you know and Joe knows is that President Trump has still not committed the federal government to put the money in that we need to build the Gateway Tunnel. He said, we got to put more skin in the game. I put more skin in the game. The overwhelming bipartisan, there isn't one Republican or Democrat in either state, New York or New Jersey, or frankly, probably in the Northeast Corridor, who doesn't stand up and say this makes complete sense. It's 20% of the nation's economy is riding on this Northeast Corridor. And the tunnels that we have at the moment are built over 100 years ago. You know, talking about Roosevelt as in Theodore Roosevelt as president.
Is there any reason to be optimistic?
Yeah, I continue to be. I spoke to someone today who was deeply engaged in this. We've had great support in Congress from both sides of the aisle. I've spoken to the president a couple of times. Today, I have a conversation with this every day. I really do believe we will get there. But it's frustrating that we haven't gotten there yet because it's so darn obvious. New York is prepared to do what they need to do. The Port Authority, I could tell you, New Jersey is. We've put skin in the game and we'll do what it takes. We just need the federal government to come in and do their share, in which case we'll get it built.
We spoke with Martin Robbins. He's the head of the Alan Voorhees Transportation Center at Rutgers and a former director of NJ Transit. And he says there are things that your administration could be doing right now.
They may need to replace a number of people on the staff at New Jersey Transit and rapidly search out suitable replacements. There are many excellent professionals that are at New Jersey Transit, but apparently there were a number of people in a kind of cadre of leaders that came together under Christie's wing that really worked to the detriment of New Jersey Transit.
Listen, Martin is a friend. He's been an advisor to me even way back when I was kicking the tires before I declared. He's one of the premier transit infrastructure experts in New Jersey, if not the Northeast or the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I would just say that we have, from day one, begun that process. So the executive director, Kevin Corbett, is a private sector, 30-plus-year career, military before that, an outstanding leader. The chairwoman of the board is Diane Gutierrez-Scachetti, who's our commissioner of the Department of Transportation. We have either on temporary basis or permanently changed a whole bunch of the team members. There are really good folks there, but Martin's right. People have to remember the funding was gutted in the Christie years, and the truck was backed up with folks who in many cases didn't have the requisite experience, and we're chopping away at all the above.
We have another caller on the line, Nick from Teaneck. I think he has an infrastructure question. Nick, are you there?
Yes. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just want to say that I voted for Governor Murphy. I'm a proud New Jersey teacher, and I'm happy to have the opportunity to talk to him. Having said that, my question is regarding the actual – I live in Bergen County on the eastern side of Bergen County.
Yep.
I have a lot of family in Hudson County. And my question is regarding the roads and highways around here.
Yep.
Is there any plan to kind of accommodate the extra added population by – I feel like the extension of New York City development, that we have a lot of transplants from New York moving to northern New Jersey, and it's becoming kind of like a borough, which is great. I love it. The coffee shops, restaurants, bars that we're getting, like the culture, which is great. But we're already adding so many more people and cars to a very densely packed area.
Nick, first of all, what level do you teach?
I teach high school, 11 and 12.
11, any grade in particular?
Mostly grade 12 seniors for English.
English. I've got a senior and a sophomore in high school, so I might want to speak to you privately after it, if you don't mind.
That's great.
Listen, we are getting a ton of folks. This notion that New Jersey is shrinking and everybody's leaving is completely wrong. Some people are leaving, and we've got to deal with some of the reasons why they're leaving. But we have the catcher's mitt out, and lots of people are coming here. We have one of the biggest immigrant receiving states in America. And we're getting a ton of folks, and something we didn't get before, increasingly younger folks who are getting priced out of and spaced out of New York, or subway crazed out of New York. And Nick's right. You know, in many cases, that's a good thing. We just got to make sure we have the infrastructure in place that can withstand that. Increasingly, again, good news, we're getting a lot more communities where millennials want to live. You know, we got a lot of criticism, I think rightfully, that we were the classic suburban, three-story, low-slung, spaceship-like corporate headquarters with bedroom communities, two-car garages built up around it. But when the country and the state started to urbanize, and places like Boston and Brooklyn and Cambridge and Austin and places started to take off, we were caught in another model. The fact of the matter is we ourselves have corrected and are getting that balance quite nicely. But Nick makes the point. It's the reason why earlier when Kerry mentioned the point on the transportation trust fund, it's why that's got to be robust, fully funded, and working and repairing and building roads. We're fixing the 494, 495 on-ramp into the Lincoln Tunnel for that very reason. Getting NJ Transit fixed and getting it where it needs to be is so crucial and part of that. So the answer, Nick, yes, Help is on the way. We understand that this is largely good news, and it's really injecting energy into our state in a youth and a startup notion, a culture into our state, which we desperately need. But we've got to make sure we've got infrastructure that backs that up, and we are on that case.
And sticking with infrastructure for a moment, what about the plans to extend PATH to Newark Airport? There's a lot of criticism of that plan, that, you know, while it would be nice to have a one-seat ride from lower Manhattan to the airport, that it's not sort of on the top of the list of critical needs that we have, and it's serving Wall Street more than it's serving the rest of the state.
I think, first of all, and Mayor Baraka and I have spoken about this a lot of the sting of that criticism, I think, would be taken out of it if there were some meaningful stops in Newark, not just the airport. Mm-hmm. You know, for instance, in the South Ward, which Mayor Baraka feels strongly about, and I join him in that strong conviction. That would take a lot of the sting out of that criticism, and I would that would be important for me. Is it important? Yes. I'd put it, Nancy, on the list, particularly if it's done the right way, as the mayor has articulated. It's probably not at the same level as the Gateway Tunnel or the bus terminal, which is finally, you know, proceeding and will slowly but surely become a reality. But given the fact, if you got the right stops and presence from the community in Newark, particularly in the wards that could use it in the commerce that you know builds up around any transit stop, I color me open-minded to supportive, depending on the specifics.
Okay. Let's go back to Joe Hernandez, who's got some social media questions.
Here's one about marijuana. We've been getting a lot of questions on that. This one is from Kevin Healy in Basking Ridge. He said, would Governor Murphy consider using an executive order to remove marijuana from New Jersey state employment drug test screenings and say it on job postings for the state?
Never been asked the question, Kevin, or Joe, or who has articulated it so well. So I don't want to give you a flippant answer. I might ask our health commissioner, Sharif El-Nahal, or our labor commissioner, one of the two of them are probably if not both, to follow up with Kevin if we can get his details. So either Dr. Sharif El-Nahal or Rob Acero Angelo. It's a good question. Like a lot of things, and provisions like that would be on this list, they were built for a different society than the one that we are evolving to. That's probably the case across any number of rules and regulations. The broader point I'd like to say, Nancy, if I may, on marijuana is three very brief bullet points. Number one, I'm incredibly proud of how much we've opened up the medical marijuana regime. It's exploding with the number of patients. The list of remedies that allow you to be part of the system has grown, as it should. There's the stigmatization around doctors has gone down. I'm incredibly proud of that progress. It's growing. We just put the RFP out for 6 more locations. We do need legislation to further its expansion, and we're working with the legislative leadership on that. Secondly, adult use or so-called recreational marijuana. Getting that done and getting it done right is important. I repeat what I've said in the studio before. Social justice, the fact that we have the widest white, non-white gap of persons incarcerated in America is the driving reason for me.
And what are you looking at in terms of a timeline now? I know I ask you this question
no
every
problem.
Time, but
no, no worries.
What are we
looking
at?
Let me just say
now?
My third point is the look back. The look back's got to be real. So if you can't have somebody who did something last Friday and is in the system, and then something you and I do on the next Monday and we're doing it legally.
So expungement.
Expungement
of records.
In some form where it's done right. That's tricky as well. So that's not a, you know, it's easy to say, but it's complicated. I'm optimistic on the timing. I continue to believe it's this year. I believe that, and we've had good back and forth with legislative leadership on both marijuana, both medical adult use and expungement, as well as minimum wage. Those are two priorities that I think we all share, and I believe, you know, in a good, perfect, not maybe not a perfect world, but a good world, we'll achieve all of the above this year. Doing it is important, but doing it right is more important, and that's going to be key.
And there was a story today about taxes and whether that you favored what was it, a 25% tax, and the legislature wants 10%.
I didn't know. I frankly still don't know where that came from. We want to do it in a way where you don't allow the black market to continue to flourish. So you want to do it in a way where you're meaningful, but not so high that you allow the bad guys to continue to control the business.
Okay, so we will return in a moment to continue to take your calls. You're listening to Ask Governor Murphy. I'm Nancy Solomon, coming to you from WBGO in Newark.
Supporting WHYY, Lantern Theater Company, presenting Hapgood by Tom Stoppard. Against a backdrop of Russian espionage, a brilliant woman is a spy master, fighting to keep her place in a profession dominated by men. Spycraft collides with particle physics in this mesmerizing journey through a wildly complex counterintelligence operation, and nothing is what it appears to be. Hapgood, on stage at Lantern Theater Company through October 14th. Details at lanterntheater.org.
The numbers are not good. 10 million people in the Carolinas and Virginia under severe weather warnings. 5 million live in the potential path of Hurricane Florence. We'll probably measure what it leaves behind in feet rather than inches of rain. We're following Florence next time on 1A. Tonight at 9 on 90.9 WHYY.
You're listening to Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WNYC and WHYY. Got a question for the governor? Call us at 844-677-9283 or send us your questions on Twitter or Facebook with the hashtag AskGovMurphy.
I'm Nancy Solomon. We're live in Newark with Governor Phil Murphy, and we're taking your calls. We've got Jeff in Dunellen. Jeff, you're online with the governor. Did we lose Jeff?
Yes.
Oh, hi, Jeff. What's your question?
Hi. My question is about immigration. I have two parts of it. First one is about licenses for undocumented immigrants. I want to know if there's any progress on that. And I wanted to make sure if this does get passed, I want to make sure if there's anything in the law that you would propose or sign in that would not give any of the information to the federal government to prevent any ICE raids, because all that information is going to be available to them if, let's say, once you leave office.
Yep.
Worried about the next person to go through. And also the second part would be about, the controversial program that of detaining immigrants in county jails.
Yep.
I know that leaves a sour taste in many people's mouths, but thing is, I actually think it's a lot more helpful to keep them in Jersey due to personal experience. It was very difficult to get somebody to go to York, and I can only imagine it's a lot more difficult for somebody who can't drive or speak English to get a consultation, to get a lawyer into these places. If we do happen to keep them in Jersey, what we could do with the tax revenue that comes in for each immigrant, we can actually put it into getting them lawyers pro bono, possibly even do trade skills and ESL programs, and we could still probably have revenue coming in as well.
Right. So good questions, Jeff. Let me start with the licenses. Yes, we still are committed to that. Sue Fulton, who is running the Motor Vehicles Commission, may want to follow up with you, Jeff, if that's okay. I'll ask my colleagues. I know Sue's listening in to give you more specifics on timing. There's a universal ID program that we have to sort of pursue as a first priority, but we're absolutely still committed to that. That was one of the things, even before Donald Trump, I talked about access to driver's license regardless of status. Statewide identification cards, access to in-state financial aid, not just tuition for dreamers. And I'm still as committed as I was then. And the answer is yes, Jeff, no interest in sharing this information with the federal government. So we absolutely share that objective, particularly in this current reality. Now, this gets us to the second question. I mentioned a few minutes ago I was the U.S. ambassador to Germany. Germany's got one of the biggest missions of anywhere in the world. It's got 40-something different government agencies. One of them is ICE. And this is a classic example where There are professional men and women who go to work every day, and they take their direction from the civilian leadership in the White House. And when you've got Barack Obama as president, you're going to have an organization which handles comports itself one way. When you've got Donald Trump as president, you could see the extraordinary politicization of their mission. And it's disgusting. It's anti-American values. It's certainly anti-immigrant. It's ripping souls of dreamers apart, ripping families apart, of law-abiding residents in our state and in our country. We're one of the most, if not the most diverse states in the nation, so this is not abstract for us. The actual detaining and the jails reality is a county matter. It's not a state matter. But I want to make sure, Jeff, you know that we're on the side of the immigrants. In fact, we put $2.1 million, $100,000 per county, so it was not necessarily precise beyond that, of in our budget for legal services for the immigrant community who have nowhere else to call but say, listen, I need to know what the actual answer is, not what the rumor might be. So we are on the side of sensible, American-valued immigration laws and reform, and will continue to be so.
Now, there was some delay in getting those pro bono, the funds for pro
Correct.
Bono lawyers. Have you made some progress?
Yes, we
on
have
that?
Made progress. It was literally, sometimes it comes down to a very simple misunderstanding. And so we've talked to the organizations that do this extraordinary work. I think we've sorted out all the questions that were around that, and we're in a better place.
You had campaigned for the department. During the campaign, you talked about wanting the Department of Human Services to establish an office to assist immigrants. New York City has a robust one. As far as I know, these offices haven't been created in New Jersey. Is that something you're still looking at?
In short, yes. And we thought that the legal aid money was a higher, more immediate priority. But the answer is yes. We want to make sure folks have one place legitimately to go where they get the right actual factual answer and not have to deal with all the innuendo, particularly when you've got people who are scared living in the shadows of our communities when they should be out full in the sunshine engaging with. That's why I believe in safer communities, Nancy. We've talked about this. It just is absolutely proven, but it makes common sense. If you've got everybody in your community willing to be out in the open, engaging deeply with neighbors, with elected officials, with community organizers, with law enforcement, you have a safer community. And we continue to be 100% committed to that.
Okay. And I believe Joe Hernandez is on the line with more social media questions.
Yes, this one's from Twitter. Nathan Finn says, I'm currently a senior in high school, and instead of looking at universities in-state, I've resorted to out-of-state universities. Rutgers and our public system is ranked the fourth highest in-state tuition rate in the nation. What will you do about this?
Nathan, boy, I'll tell you something. This has been a perennial issue for us. We lead the nation per capita in exporting high school seniors, and I've got one, by the way, and college seniors. And we've got to crack the back of that. And as you rightfully point out, affordability is a big piece of this. And by the way, we should be very proud of our institutions of higher education, whether they be four-year, two-year graduate programs. U.S. News and World Report just rated 8 institutions of higher education in the top 300 in America in New Jersey, including number one in the nation, Princeton University. Rutgers made enormous strides in its rankings. There's a lot to be proud of, but we got too many families who can't afford the darn bill. And I can't tell you how many people I've met who say, listen, what do I do? My daughter and my son are graduating with $175,000 worth of debt, which is insane. Mm-hmm. So, again, this is something you can't there's no magic wand. You can't turn that reality around overnight. But you can do a whole series of things, which we're doing. Number one, we have a multi-year plan to make community college free for everybody. And some people say, well, some people don't need that. Well, I've met enough of the students. A lot of students do, and they're not all 18 or 19 years old. They're in their teens, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. And so making that free which we expect to do over a period of years, increasing tuition assistance grants, which we increased meaningfully in our budget, increasing money into educational opportunity funds. We've established a pilot program that if you stay in New Jersey, you go to college, you major in a field that we're emphasizing, and you then graduate and work in that field, we've got a tuition forgiveness, loan forgiveness program. And so, Nathan, all I could tell you is we got it. It's a challenge. It's been building for years and years and years. We are committed to turning that curve around. I also think, by the way, the extent to which not only can we make college more affordable, but back to some of the earlier questions about particularly Nick from TNEC when he talked about the communities, the more livable communities, walkable communities for millennials we have, that gives us a shot at keeping them. I think the better a startup culture, particularly in tech, in the life sciences. You know, we have 15 incubators in New Jersey. New York's got 179. Young people have been, that's public policy has led to that. We've now put some things in place that are going to explode our incubator reality. That'll also be a magnet to keep young people in the state. So, Nathan, bear with us. We're going to get there. I hope we can still convince you to go to college in New Jersey, if not graduate school.
Okay, so we're going to take a call from Michael in Trenton. Michael, you're on the air.
Thank you.
Hey, Michael.
It's an honor to talk to you. I basically admire what you stand for. My name is Michael Kahn. I'm the author of Exposing the Money Machine. Currently, I'm in Trenton State Psychiatric Hospital, where I was put in civil commitment when I basically exposed GEO Group and was investigating Homeland Security. They put me in here with lies. The judge told me, and a civil commitment court judge told me that I should leave 3 months ago. They're still keeping me here, and I'm paying the bill still. And how do I get out? What have you done with overturning wrongful convictions? You're setting up a program for that, and that highly interests me. Having been charged something in 2004, I'm still paying for it, even though I did not do it.
Okay, Michael, yep. Thank you. So wrongful convictions.
Yeah, listen, first of all, Michael, God bless you, and we got to get to a better place in so many cases like this. One of the first things we did in the first number of days as governor is we reconstituted the Criminal Sentencing Commission, and that sounds like it's specific only to sentencing, and it had laid dormant for 8 years in the prior administration. It's now up and running and has teeth, and its mandate is to look at all elements of comprehensive criminal justice reform, and that includes the whole panoply of what can you do up front to prevent folks, particularly young persons of color, from getting into the system. You know, the disparities across race, particularly the juvenile realities of when kids get punished in school within the school parameters versus put into the criminal justice system are appalling. Things when you're in the system like solitary confinement, obviously low-end drug crimes we've talked about, minimum mandatory sentences, wrongful convictions, Michael should know is on that list. We need it. We have the widest white non-gap of persons incarcerated in America, as I mentioned earlier. We're committed to cracking the back of that. Again, it's something like a lot of things we talked about tonight. There's no one magic wand, but there are a series of steps you can take that get you to a much better place.
Hey, before we take another call, let me squeeze in a question about the environment. You just announced that you're looking for huge development of offshore wind. I believe it's one of the biggest projects in the country that you're soliciting proposals from developers
yes.
on. So tell us about that. But also, you know, let's hear about the big picture for getting to 100% clean energy by 2050,
yep.
because there's a lot of development going in for, you know, there are proposals for two natural gas plants in New Jersey. There are the gas pipelines. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of people are saying, well, if you want to get to 100% clean, why are we investing in
yep.
natural gas?
So let me say first what happened today. This is a big deal, and it's a decision the Board of Public Utilities took today. And I give Joe Fiordaliso, who runs it, and his whole board huge kudos. They formally established the solicitation process excuse me, for 1,100 megawatts of offshore wind. The bids are due in December, and the decisions will be made by July 1 of next year, and then it's off to the races. This is the largest offshore wind solicitation in the history of the United States. Even more importantly, or as importantly, I asked the Board of Public Utilities to establish the balance of the solicitations, another 1,200 megawatts in 2020 and another 1,200 in 2022, adding up to 3,500 megawatts, which will give us plenty of time to get there by the year 2030. New Jersey literally is uniquely situated for offshore wind. I mentioned this the other day at a climate conference. I spoke to Jerry Brown, and I said, I want it such that New Jersey is the California of the East Coast. And one of my Jersey friends said, Murphy, you didn't show enough attitude. You should have said you want New Jersey to be so rocking on clean energy that California will look up and they'll be the New Jersey of the West Coast. We have a commitment to be 100% clean by the year 2050. 3,500 megawatts of offshore wind, by the way, folks should know that sounds pretty abstract. That's 1.5 million homes. 1.5 million homes by 2030 powered by offshore wind. We have allowed the nuclear plants, assuming the ones other than Oyster Creek, which I believe today is D-Day,
day.
Mm-hmm. To stay open through their useful life as long as they're obviously responsibly operated. That is a big part of the bridge. We are unleashing an enormous amount of solar, community solar, a lot of environmental justice steps that are going to impact urban communities in particular, energy conservation. There's a whole range of things. We have not operated with a master energy plan for 10 or 15 or if not longer number of years. We've put in place the process for a master energy plan that will be able to answer some of the questions you asked, Nancy. Why would we do – how does Project X fit into this? Without that context, it's very hard. All you have is a bunch of one-off discussions about this or that. We have to be better than that.
And what about the pipelines?
Again,
a lot of people are upset about
the
pipelines.
100%. And some of these that we've called out specifically on, we call balls and strikes on these. Again, I want the master energy plan to be put in place to have that context. We could say, okay, does this project make sense? Does this make sense, et cetera? And so let's wait and see what that master energy plan tells us. That'll be the roadmap to a 2050, 100% clean energy economy. By the other thing which I want to say is some folks like to present this either clean energy or good union jobs. It's both. It's both. The offshore wind energy plans I just talked about, thousands of good, high-paying, highly technical union jobs. We can't have our cake and eat it, too, on that front.
Okay, well, we're running out of time here, so I'm going to go to Joe because I know he'll make it quick. What's our last question from social media, Joe?
Here's one from Zach in Lawrenceville. He says, Do you believe felons should have the right to vote?
Zach in Lawrenceville, the answer is yes, as long as we do it right. And the problem in New Jersey is we strip away rights from folks permanently, and we never reinstate those rights, whether they be voting, whether they be access to get some kind of a license, whether it's drivers to cut hair, what you name it, access to certain institutions, particularly a young person, and invariably it's a young person of color, is convicted. They do their time, whatever it is, 3 years, 5 years, whatever it might be. But what they don't realize, I always say sometimes they did that hard, but they didn't realize for the rest of their life it's semi-hard. And we can't have that. You pay your price. Folks deserve a second chance. Now, we're committed to opening democracy up, and we've signed one of the nation's most advanced automatic voter registration regimes anywhere in the United States. We're committed to making many more steps. We don't have in-person early voting, as an example. And just folks should know that that's something that we're highly committed to.
Okay. Well, thank you, Governor. I think we're going to have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Great to be back, Nance.
You've been listening to Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WHYY and WNYC. This show was produced by Katie Colinari with help from Joe Hernandez, Alexandra Hill, Megan Ryan, Sean Bowditch, and Doug Doyle. Our executive producer is Amy Niles. Technical direction by David Tallickson. I'm Nancy Solomon. Thanks for listening.